Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 145 for February 26th, 2010, The Browser Ballot. Windows Weekly is brought to you by the new Carbonite Pro. It's simple, secure, and affordable online backup for your small business. For a free trial and to learn more, visit CarbonitePro.com. And by GoToAssist Express, the easy way to provide instant tech support to your customers remotely. Support smarter with GoToAssist Express. For a free 30-day trial, go to GoToAssist.com/Windows. And by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to Audible.com/Windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show that covers Microsoft in all its many guises, including the Zune, the Xbox 360, Windows 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. Ladies and gentlemen, the star of our show, the maitre d', the maitre d'hôte at the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com, the news editor at Windows IT Pro, the author of Windows 7 Secrets, Paul Thurrott. Hello, Paul.
You know, it's like saying Microsoft, its name is Legion.
It is.
You know? But now we have,
they probably have, I guess we've moved on to new 66 products.
Yeah, they always get it right on the sixth try, those guys.
That's right. There was something I was talking about the other day. Oh, Windows, worst name ever. Windows Phone 7 Series.
Yeah. Well, I understand, though, that the real name of this, what they want these things to be called is Windows Phone, right? The 7 series denotes that it's, you know, version 7, and there'll be a series of phones, right? I guess. But, you know, but I mean, the system, you know, I actually got an email from someone at Microsoft to explain to me the name of the OS is now Windows Phone OS 7.0, you know? And it's funny how the names are all over the place. Microsoft can't name things. I mean, let's just be honest. Right?
No, they're terrible.
They're terrible at it.
It's almost sad because they actually, you know, this is the Windows 7 mobile phone series is actually looking
Windows
pretty good.
Phone, Windows Phone.
Windows Phone. Not Windows Mobile anymore.
No. Sometimes you got to take the dog out back and find a...
Feed it a bone.
Find a barn where he, or a farm where he can live.
So coming up, we've got our Windows 7 feature of the week. We've got our Audible pick of the week. We've got, goodness gracious, the 7 tip of the week. We've got a software pick of the week. It's just going to be a jam-packed show. So, you know, before we get going too far, let me just do a quick commercial for GoToAssist Express, if you do not mind. Grab yourself a cup of coffee.
I wish back. I could.
No, you hate it when they say, sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride. I hate that. It's like a cliche.
It is a cliche, so I think we should say it.
I was in a movie theater. And, you know, they have the movie tunes thing they do before the movies. And they said it twice in a row. Like, the person said, okay, here comes movie tunes. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. And then the movie tunes guy came on and said, it's time for movie tunes. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. And it's like, I want to kill somebody now.
I don't think it's possible in a movie theater these days to sit back, relax, and enjoy anything, right?
Exactly.
Are you always on the edge of your seat waiting for the jerk in front of you to take out his smartphone in the middle of the movie? You know, have that little screen that lights up the entire theater.
The whole theater.
Right. I think that's where we're at.
I think, frankly, when you're in an environment where somebody tells you to sit back, relax, and enjoy, it's almost guaranteed not to be a pleasant experience. It's like...
Yeah, you're actually setting yourself up for failure right there.
They're admitting.
Yep. The question isn't whether people will do it. The question is, who's going to be the guy?
Right.
You know?
Right. Who's going to be the guy?
Someone's going to screw it up.
It's like Rounders, you know? Sit down at a poker table.
I haven't had a good movie experience since like the first Batman movie, you know. I mean, it's been a while.
You mean with Adam West and Burt Ward?
No, I mean the Tim Burton.
Yeah, that was a good one. The Dark Knight. But not the original. Not the Dark Knight, but it was.
Yeah.
The first Dark Knight of the Dark Knight series.
We're old enough now that we have lived through several Batman series of movies.
Different kinds. Like there was the camp Batman. Yeah. There was the I remember, and I'm sure it was from the 30s or 40s, so it was, you know, they brought it back. But there was a Batman
almost serial. Like a detective type thing.
Yeah, right? Serial, and he had really big long ears.
Yeah. My kids came in the room while I was watching the Adam West Batman movie, which features the bat shark repellent. And they thought this was the stupidest thing they'd ever seen in their life.
He had the utility belt with everything. You ask for it, he's got it.
It was like you took one of their happiest memories and you just stuck a stick in it. And
yeah.
Yeah.
It literally jumped the bat shark repellent.
Yep.
So, folks, I want to tell you a little bit about Go to Assist. This is a product that I've been using since the Screensavers days. We use the Big Brother, the original Go to Assist, to help people with their computer problems. Now there's Go to Assist Express, which is faster, lighter weight, and yet even more useful and better. And you can try it free. So this is really something I think you all will be interested in. If you listen to this show, you probably are in support for somebody. But particularly the IT professionals, the folks who support software, this is a great product for you. It is based on the GoToPC, GoToMeeting, Citrix remote desktop technology. That's best in class. I mean, there's nothing better. But they've tuned it to be easy for you to help people with their computers remotely. You can have 8 sessions going at the same time, so you never have to wait for a session to complete or, you know, a scan to complete to start the next one. You can see what software is running, what operating system, what security software, what's running in the background. You can copy files from your computer to there, so if you've got an update or a patch, you just transfer it over with a drag and drop. Even unattended support. It's very easy for your clients. They don't have to have it installed ahead of time. They don't have to know anything. You just say, go here, please. I want to help. I'm here to help. I want you to try it free for 30 days. You'll see how useful this is. They have day passes for people who are occasionally supporting family and friends, and they have monthly passes for those who do it all the time, professionals. GoToAssist.com/windows is a free 30-day pass. This would be a good time to try it if you've got a friend or know somebody who needs some help. GoToAssist.com/windows. Try it free right now. You're going to love it. Paul Thurrott, we begin with Microsoft's new user interface?
Oh, no.
Whoa.
It's called DOS.
Back to the command line.
And if you can use function keys on your keyboard, it's way better.
Yes, baby. And now we've got something called Terminate Stay Resident Programs that actually yes, exactly. run in the background.
It's sort of like multitasking.
But not.
It's not really.
So what is Metro UI? This is interesting.
Well, this is the UI that's on the Windows phone. And we talked about it just a little bit last week, but I really kind of wanted to beat it to death because I really feel like Microsoft is not getting enough credit here for this because I think it's a big deal, and I think it's a UI that has legs in the sense that I see it happening in other places. You know, you may recall last year at some point when Microsoft announced that they were going to put the Zune interface in different places. You know, one of the first things they announced was we're going to put it on the Xbox. And I was really excited about that because if you look at the interfaces they've created for the Zune, they're beautiful. But the initial interface, you know, the Zune interface that they put on the Xbox isn't really that great. It's basically just the standard Xbox UI, but with a black background color and kind of Zune colors or whatever. They didn't really do much to make it all that innovative or whatever, but that's just for video. So I think looking forward, if you think about what's possible on the Xbox, they could do interfaces for photos and movies as well as music and so forth, and base it on this kind of Zune UI, which is the predecessor to this Metro UI, which is what's available coming on Windows Phone. And I think the thing that's interesting about it is if you look at Microsoft's high-resolution pictures of the user interface, they always show it like it's the phone is like this portal that moves over a panorama, right? And it's essentially columns of lists. And the phone itself, the screen of the phone, can only see one of those columns at a time. And those lists can be text, you know, like they would be in Windows Mobile 6.5 or on the Zune HD oftentimes. Or they can be graphics, you know, like little photos, rectangles and boxes and different things. But if you look at that panoramic picture that's behind it, you know, that makes up the UI, it's hard not to imagine that thing being on like a tablet. You know, that if Microsoft were to make an iPad-type device, you know, they could use this exact same UI, but you wouldn't be scrolling across it. You would see all of it at the same time, or at least more of it, you know, more different columns. And I just think it's a, you know, it's funny because they've been working on it for a long, long time. This dates back to probably the second version of Media Center and the portable Media Center software they came, and then eventually the Zune. And then Windows Mobile 6.5 has an early version of it as well. But now, you know, when you see it, the full-fledged version as it occurs in Metro, I mean, it's incredibly innovative. And I think it's something that, you know, I think this could be a UI. You know, this is an interesting break with the past. It is in many ways a lot like the Office ribbon, right? Where you have something that is an established product and you think, well, how can we ever really improve this in some way that's meaningful? And then this thing comes out and you'll say, oh, wow, actually, there was a way to make that happen. You know, we didn't see that happening. And I could picture this UI making sense in a variety of device types, I guess is what I'm saying. And I'm fascinated that it's coming out of Microsoft because, you know, if Apple had done this, it would have been on the evening news every night.
You're right. That's true.
It would have been a big, big deal. And, you know, not to rip on Apple too hard, but I mean, you know, I think it's notable, you know, that this iPad thing gets a lot of press, and I'm sure it's going to be a great device and all that. But what it really is at the end of the day, is just another device. It's the same thing they made before, a little bit bigger, another way to buy their content and access their ecosystem and all that stuff. It's really not that innovative. It's just the next thing. It's semi-obvious in many ways. Whereas Microsoft really, you know, and again, because they got beaten so badly in this market, I mean, we shouldn't put too fine of, or, you know, ignore that aspect of it. But, you know, they really went back and rethought, you know, how people could interact with these devices and everything. And I'm impressed by how forward leaning it is, you know? And this type of thing doesn't happen all that often. It's sort of like when the iPhone appeared, you know, compared to the smartphones of the day, like the Motorola Q type devices or the, you know, your standard BlackBerry type device. You know, the iPhone was like a breath of fresh air. It was amazing, you know? And I feel like this has that, has the potential to have that kind of impact as well. Plus,
but
used elsewhere.
You really think, the used elsewhere is what kind of intrigues me. You really think that it's good for, I mean, it seems, of course, ideal for a small screen, but you think it really would be useful in other?
Yes, because the predecessor to it is in use already on other things. You know, for example, if you look at the way Media Center works in Windows 7.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
It's the same type of interface. You know,
it's a natural for, you're right, because it's a natural for a joystick.
It would work well across a lot of devices. Imagine the Zune, I'm sorry, the Xbox interface being like that. And by the way, actually, if you kind of strip it down, it kind of is, right? Because you go up and down, you go left and right.
Right.
You know, you dive in, you come out, and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, arguably, maybe the Xbox is part of this interface paradigm, you know, simplistic version of it. But, when you know, it's interesting when you combine the navigational elements of it with that kind of interesting depth of field you get with an OLED type display, right? Which, if you look at the Zune HD, you know what I mean. It creates this overall experience. It's really interesting. Now, I don't have any insider information here. I'm not actually saying that they are doing this, and I know that they're doing this. In many ways, I'm trying to prompt them to do so if they're not. But I think that this interface is a game changer in many ways, and not just for the mobile market, not just for the smartphone market. I think this is something they need to think about as a potential interface for other things. Mm-hmm. You know,
mm-hmm.
And the other thing, and I wrote this in an article, but it's interesting to me, and I know this to be a fact, that virtually the entire company at Microsoft, all of the different product groups, have looked at what the Windows team did with Windows 7, and they immediately started to emulate that so that they could achieve the same type of success with their own products. There's been something that bugs me about that. And I think the more I think about it, what it is that Windows 7 is the result of something that happened before Windows Vista, but also all the stuff around the antitrust stuff and all that stuff. It's a product of its time. It's like a slice of time. You know, that kind of success by doing that exact same kind of thing isn't necessarily going to be easy to duplicate with other products. And Microsoft, of all companies, should know this because, as often discussed, just because you do things a certain way with Windows and PC makers and all your partners and all that stuff, doesn't mean that model is going to work with, you know, video games, phones, MP3 players, whatever. Pick your market.
It's really well suited to an MP3 player. I mean, that's why it looks so good on the Zune. I mean, it's just a natural.
The interface is, yeah. But the thing is, you know, rather than emulate Windows 7, I think that what these other companies need to be doing, and Office is maybe the one that sort of did do it with Office 2007, but look at how they rethought things with Windows mobile, Windows Phone, and apply that kind of mentality. In fact, I would argue, you've done Windows 7, great, congratulations, very successful. When you're looking to do the next big thing, you need to look at Windows Phone now, because that's, to me, the model of innovation. Not that it has to just duplicate the UI across all of their products, that's not the point. But really rethink things in the way that they rethought things. You know, I think that's the real innovation. It's not, you know, Apple's, the iPad thing, again, to sort of make the comparison, the iPad is the type of product that Microsoft would make. It's a continuation of the stuff they did before and a way to firm up their dominant position. It's the type of thing a company makes when it gets comfortable and it's dominant, and what it wants to do is protect its market. It's not innovative. It's just another thing. But the Windows Phone, in some ways, it has to come out of failure. It has to come out of being in a bad position. That's the type of reality that has to exist for you to even think like this, right? And that's the mindset, I think, that the other parts of Microsoft need to be in, even if they're not necessarily failing.
Is the thing that Dick Brass was talking about in his New York Times article a hindrance here, though? There's the not invented here syndrome with a lot of companies. In Microsoft, it's not invented in my department syndrome, you know? Is that right? I mean, in fact, one of the real successes of this UI is that it does go across platforms. It's on the Xbox, kind of. It's definitely on the Zune. It's on the phone now.
Well, okay, but everything we just said, those guys are all in the same product group.
Right.
No coincidence there.
Yeah. Right?
I would say this, not to get too much into the mentality of the Microsoft hive and so forth, but you're right. Obviously, there's cross-departmental rivalries and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I know to a team almost that most of Microsoft has rallied around the way Windows 7 was developed, right?
Yes. That's the success of Windows 7.
This is the model, you know, that we're going to emulate going forward. They will emulate it years after the fact that it's been proven that this no longer works.
Right. That's the other problem with Microsoft.
Yeah. So, you can almost picture the hapless fool in each, division or whatever, each product team who was the first guy to come up with, we need to do what Windows 7 did, that's great. I really think it's not, I think the UI itself can be pushed out to different kinds of things. That's fine. That's one thing. But I really, what I'm talking about at a more general level is just the thinking that went into this and the way they approach the market. You know, you approach things differently when you're protecting something. That's what Windows does, right? And Windows 7, for all the greatness, for all the stuff that's great about it, really what it's about is protecting that market, right? There's a feeling that Windows is being assailed. We need to fix this, They do little steps at first. They try to shore up Windows Vista, with the Mojave project and all that kind of stuff. Okay, cute. Windows 7 is obviously much better than Windows Vista across the board. Everyone agrees on that. Fine. But now what, right? I mean, the next version of Windows, you're working off something that worked really great, right? I mean, the sequel is almost never as good as the original. So how do you fix that? What do you do to make it exciting? It's easy to make something that's better than Windows Vista. You could, as they proved, you could rename Windows Vista, say it's something different, and people will think it's better. I mean, coming out with something that was not actually necessarily a huge achievement, right? I think that this Metro thing, though, I think this is a big achievement, and I think it's something they need to run with. So that's
good. I hope they hear you in Redmond. I think that's a good point. Because you're right. We did touch on this. I didn't realize it was called the Metro UI. Why do they call it the Metro?
That's the code name, I think.
So the big story last week, I think it just happened as we were closing out week. Microsoft and Yahoo got regulatory approval from the EU.
Right.
What do it mean?
I don't think it means much. Well, in a very general sense, they're creating a search platform that's a solid number two. So they've kind of bought their way into that market. Great. I would say, and we'll hit on this in a bit too separately, we're finally starting to see some interesting Google backlash, right? And for all of the nothing that this Microsoft Yahoo deal seems to mean, you know, you never know. This could be good timing in some ways because there's a little bit of fatigue out there. You know, Google seems to own everything online these days. And certainly there's their search engine and the advertising associated with it, which is the only thing that they make money on from what I can tell, is so vast and so powerful and so voluminous that they can afford to create these products that are in all kinds of crazy different markets and just compete with anyone they want. You know, that's very Microsoftian when you think about it, right? You have the single core product that makes all the money, and then you can use the revenues from that to enter other markets. That's kind of what Microsoft did. So, yeah, I mean, right now, I don't think there's going to be a big difference. If you happen to be a Yahoo user, whatever that means, I don't think you're going to see much of a difference.
Doesn't it really mean, though, I mean, kind of really the end of Yahoo, kind of, a little bit?
Well, that remains to be seen. I mean, I think that's one of the potential outcomes here. That would
I guess
be
it's
my
just guess. Search, and Yahoo's a content company, too, and they still get to do the sales.
Well, that's the thing. When you look at Yahoo, like, where do they make money, right?
Right.
And for whatever it's worth, they're still making the vast majority of the money off of their advertising related to searching on their site. So for Microsoft, the play here was just the market share to you know, push their advertising work, you know, higher and make it more interesting to advertisers. For Yahoo, you know, I think financially it just made sense.
Right.
And plus, I think they would argue and do argue that, you know, they provide value around search, you know.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, Microsoft wants to invest in this. Let them do so. Why not?
Right.
You know, and if Yahoo's smart, and there's no indication that they are, but if
there's
they
a
are,
big if.
you know, if they are, you know, they'll build on what Microsoft does. I mean, they'll position it as a superset of Bing, right? You know, we have Bing plus this other stuff we added on top of it. So hopefully they do something like that and they can differentiate themselves. But it's just funny because, you know, this was such a huge story for years,
yeah.
Right? Microsoft's right. going to buy Yahoo. Microsoft wants to buy the search engine. Microsoft's going to do the deal. Will the regulators approve it? And then, you know, it kind of winds down and, yeah, okay, whatever. And it's just over, you know, kind of fizzles out. So I guess we'll see. I mean, it's going to take years. I mean, we won't know whether to call this successful, right. Non-successful, non-event. I don't know.
It's funny because I imagine there are a few authors who said, oh, I'm going to write a book about the Microsoft Yahoo battle back and forth, buy it and blah. And
oh, that must have been the worst. Yeah. Can you imagine anyone who actually did work on that?
It's like it was such a limp fizzle dud at the end.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I guess I don't have a book here.
Got to pray something else happens because right now it's like,
Nothing.
Yep.
Nothing. I've been seeing pictures on Buzz. A number of people have posted them of the browser ballot screen.
Yeah. So are people from Europe actually starting to see it? Is that why?
Yeah. Chris Messina posted a bunch of them. He works at Google now.
Okay.
And I don't know where he got them, but they're in his Buzz. And
I wonder how they do that. If it's by, I mean, if you just installed the. Look at that thing.
It's well, you know, and I don't think you see this whole thing. I think somebody stitched it together. Well, no, because look, there's a scroll bar. Of course, it's a Mac scroll bar. So I'm not sure exactly what's going on.
No, he must have stitched that together.
So
those are all the choices.
Firefox, IE, Safari, Google Chrome, Opera. I don't even know what that is.
See, once you get beyond that, we're talking about like the names of like characters from Star Wars movies.
Flashpeak, Avant.
Sleipnir,
a fully customizable browser. Flock.
I believe he was a bounty hunter in Empire Strikes Back. And then
Maxon.
No, I mean, this whole thing is crazy, right? These are crazy browsers. You can't even trust the browsers that make sense.
Now, they randomize the order, right?
Yeah.
Or no?
Well, but what you see is the top six, if I'm not mistaken, randomly.
Right. So you could conceivably, you could be a poor European sod that gets this.
It is almost
which browser should I use? Flashpeak, Avant, Sleipnir?
Just by putting this thing out, some of these browsers are going to gain market share.
Well, yeah, automatically.
Right? Yeah.
But I feel bad for the novice, the newbie, who gets this. You know, there's no recognizable browser on here at all. Flashpeak, Avant, Sleipnir, Flock, Maxthon, or Gmelion.
Just in case the flash in your browser wasn't insecure enough, we offer even more flash.
But this is the problem, is that once you open this ballot up, you can't eliminate anybody.
I think we should eliminate everybody. I don't understand why this thing exists. Right. This is crazy talk. But, you know, maybe that's just me.
It's crazy talk.
It just doesn't make sense. This is regulation run amok, you know? And we were worried about governments designing user interface. You know, my bad. It's that's great.
Yeah.
Could you imagine? I imagine, you know, like my mother calling and trying to understand this thing. I can't even... It's unbelievable. And by the way, you know, the little indignity to this is it only appears if IE is set as your default browser.
What?
Yeah, like if you actually have Firefox configured as your default or whatever, you'll never see that. Yeah, it's a choice.
I thought it was when you... I'm trying to figure this out. I thought it was when you installed Windows, like the first thing you saw.
Oh, it probably will be going forward. But, of course, now they have to roll it out to people who already have Windows, so it's sort of retroactive.
Oh, so, wait a minute. So, like, I do a Windows update, and now all of a sudden I get this?
Yeah.
If I'm but only if I'm using Internet Explorer.
Yep. Because you might not really want to be using it. You just don't know yet. Yeah.
That doesn't seem right.
I agree. But, you know,
the good news is... It's governmental regulation. This is what they decided on. All right.
Wow. But the important point here really is that now the EU, or the EC, the European Commission, the regulatory arm of the EU, is turning their attention to Google, you know? So we might not really be talking about the EU very much going forward, which I have to say I'd be happy to be the case, you know? So I guess they're search companies, essentially, German, French, and I'm not sure what the other one is, a third company, have all complained to... You know, regulators in Europe that that Google is, you know, doing what Microsoft did. So apparently, that argument works really well over there. So now they've asked Google some questions.
We have questions for you.
Where are the papers?
You have papers.
Yeah. So good. I'm glad they've moved on.
Well, now then, of course, you saw this crazy Italian court. Case.
I know. That's nuts. Huh? You know, there's a lot of weird stuff about that one. This is where a court in Italy ruled that three Google executives were essentially personally responsible for whatever violations the company had, because that's, I guess, part of the law in Italy.
It's YouTube, and they've arrested these guys.
Yeah. And yeah, that's weird. And there's a lot of cultural stuff going on there. I guess Italy has a surprisingly low internet usage percentage based on their population and whatnot, and compared to their surrounding countries. I'm not sure how that plays into it, but I have to think that's not going to stand, you know, this seems kind of bizarre to me. It's an awful case, though. I mean, it was a YouTube video.
It was a Down syndrome kid who was being bullied in Turin, and it was on YouTube for 2 months.
I guess they referred to the kid by name. You know,
the problem. Now Google removed it as soon as the police said to pull it down, but the case was against them because they didn't pull it down soon enough. And basically, this decision means that it's going to be now YouTube's responsibility in Italy anyway to go through every video and review it.
Well, yeah. Now this is interesting, and it's not very clear cut actually, because Google wants to argue that they're essentially the, you know, the network operator. You know, we don't have control over
they're
the content.
Carrier. Yeah.
That's an interesting argument, except that Google also is the only company benefiting from the advertising on all those sites that they own. So, you know, Google is a company that makes billions and billions of dollars a year off and off of content that other people create, right? Google is a company that is in court in various continents right now over their intellectual property violations regarding such things as illegal book scanning and, you know, deals they've tried to make with the publishing companies here in the United States and so forth. So, you know, I'm not saying Google's right or wrong, but certainly these are things that we need to look at with a company like this.
Right.
So this will be
a
big legal issue going forward. Absolutely.
I mean, you know, one thing Google, I guess, could do is just say, I'm pulling out. We're getting out of here. We're not going to be in Italy.
They could do that. But I mean, what, you know, that's a little bizarre, right? So in other words, what if Google leaves China? right?
Right.
And then they say, well, yeah, you know, you guys, have, you're on to us in Italy, so we're going to leave Italy too.
Pretty soon there's nothing left.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you get to a weird position there. I mean, you know, I don't like the rules of the game, so I'm leaving. I'm going to take my ball and go home. It is almost a supposition of guilt there, isn't there? You know, when you do that?
No, it's just saying, well, the laws in this land make it impossible for us to do business because, well, for instance, in the U.S., we know, I don't know if it's U.S. or YouTube or what, we know that 20 hours of video are uploaded every minute to YouTube.
Right.
I'd have to do the math.
Not all of it is going to be on the up and up.
But that means I think you would need 60 times, so 60 minutes an hour times 20, you'd need 1,200 people 24/7 reviewing video in order to see everything that gets uploaded alone. 1,200 people.
You know, that would be tough for a small business. I mean, what are we talking about here? That actually isn't too onerous when you think about how big Google is.
Yeah. It's going to be more, though, because that's if they were, like, doing nothing but looking at video all the time. So let's say
triple it for 8 hours.
3,600 people. Mm-hmm. No, 24/7. So it's times three. So that's a total of 10,000 new employees.
Okay. Well,
that's a lot. If you want a burden.
But if you want the revenue from the advertising, maybe that's the right now they're just benefiting from it. You know, they're doing stuff after the fact. Yeah. Their argument is if you complain, we'll take it down maybe eventually. That's cute, but maybe that's not the way it is going to be going forward. They've made a lot of money, Leo. Yeah. A lot of money.
I don't know if YouTube is profitable.
I just mean in general.
Yeah, in general, but is YouTube profitable? I mean, in other words, if I'm Google, it doesn't matter
because they were able to YouTube and keep it going based on the revenues from this one product that they have that is successful.
Right. You know? But I'm saying if the business decision would be, if some other company started YouTube,
they wouldn't have the funds to allow that many people to update that many videos and have them and host them and just broadcast them. I mean, this is a money losing business. It's expensive. No one else could do it. The fact that Google is the only company on earth that can afford to do this is, I think, an important part of the discussion. You know? I don't know. I'm not a lawyer, Leo.
I think it's a business decision, not a legal decision. So if I'm the business guy at Google and you tell me, okay, in order to keep YouTube going, which is probably running at a deficit you have to hire 10,000 people. Let's close that thing down.
But this conversation is just like the auto industry saying, you know, how much is it going to cost to put airbags in their cars? we're going to fight that. Okay. Because we did some math and basically X number of people are going to die.
You got a point.
You know, that's sort of what that's the math, right? Same discussion.
You have an excellent point.
I don't know.
Let's let Paul polish his point, and we'll be back with more in just a moment, including our tip of the week for Windows 7, our feature, I guess we call it, of the week. But first, I want to mention a little bit about my friends at Carbonite Pro. You know, we've talked about Carbonite, the consumer version. Great, really great backup solution for anybody who has a computer. It was created by David Friend. I had dinner with David a couple of weeks ago. I really like this guy. Right out of college, he started ARP, the synthesizer company ARP, and he was telling great stories about, you know, synthesizers and musicians and all the bands that used his ARPs. And one of the things he did early on, he gave musicians a gold card that said, you can go into any ARP dealer anywhere in the world if you have this gold card, and you can take your ARP synthesizer if it's broken or damaged or not working right, and they will just trade it. No questions asked. Here's a brand new one and take the old one. He understands customer service. You know, when you're working with rock and roll stars, you got to keep them happy, right? Later in life, he's a multiple serial entrepreneur, very smart guy. His daughter in college loses a paper. And he says, you know, there's got to be a better way to do backup. She hadn't been backing up. And he started Carbonite. It's online automated backup that just happens automatically. Everything, you know, all your personal documents are just automatically backed up. You don't have to think about it. And they're available at any time. It's very easy to get them back, not just on your computer, but there's an iPhone app, an internet app. You can get files anywhere that you can get online. Now, fast forward to 2010,
And he's starting to see a lot of businesses use Carbonite, the consumer product, in business because there's nothing like it. So he says, well, we really ought to do a pro version. And that's what Carbonite Pro is all. It's brand new. And really, frankly, they're looking for people like you to try it because they want to make this better. I've been working with them for a while on it. Go to CarbonitePro.com and get a 30-day trial of this absolutely free. You can install it on every single computer in your business. You have a centralized management console, centralized backup. If you choose, your end users, though, can restore themselves, which I think is great. Nothing like the corporate backup we had at Tech TV where you had to, like, you delete a file and you have to make the perp walk, the very embarrassing walk back to the IT department saying, can you restore that file? I deleted it. You don't have to do that with Carbonite Pro. Prices start as low as $10 a month. I'll give you an example. You should go to CarbonitePro.com and see the pricing grid. But if you have 8 computers, total of 5 gigs backup, merely $25 a month. There is nothing in enterprise anything like this. For 18 computers with 5 gigs, $50 a month. We're talking about $10 to $50 a month for peace of mind for you and your employees. And it's a lot less than buying the Carbonite consumer version. So please go to CarbonitePro.com. And try this free right now. And especially if you're an IT or a support guy, you know, you've got your business. You know, actually, it's just as much for somebody like me. For years, not only owned the business, but was the sole support for it. People like you, sole proprietors with a small business, or maybe you've got you just don't have an IT person. This is a great solution. CarbonitePro.com. You will never lose another file again. We thank them so much for their support of Windows Weekly. Mm-hmm. Watu.
I knew you were going to question that one.
Watu. What is Watu? W-A-T-U.
I think that's what Greedo said in Star Wars.
Watu, it is.
Watu. No, it's the Windows Activation Technologies update for Windows 7.
We talked about this.
Yeah, a few weeks ago.
And you convinced me that it was a worthwhile thing.
Well, I'm not sure what I convinced you of, but what I said was, for something like this, right? I mean, you kind of hate to get these kind of updates. It is optional, right? You can opt out of it if you want to. You have to explicitly do so, but you can do so. And, if you're not pirating Windows,
yes,
it should be okay.
If you have done nothing wrong, you should have nothing to fear.
I actually had that moment of truth today. I went into Windows Update when I saw that it was live and looked at it and, installed it just to see. So after 16 hours of repairing my computer, no, it's fine. It was fine on my computer. Although I have gotten a couple of emails. I guess there's some... As there always is, there's a support forum on Microsoft.com, and some people are complaining that it has caused some issues. But
yeah, see, as soon as you say activation or authentication, I always get a little squirrely because they've had not the best, a little bit checkered past. Been a little bit checkered.
I don't recall any major issues.
Just a little bit checkered.
Well, sure. But, with experience,
they've screwed
us over so many times now. They've gotten really good at it.
And if you don't want it, you don't have to get it. Tell me again why I might want it.
Well, and I have heard from these people, by the way. There are some people who buy computers from local companies. The guy in the little square who has a little shop, and he's in there a couple hours a week or whatever. And, maybe Windows is a little squirrely and they're not really sure they got the right thing. And you can run this thing, and it will tell you if it's one of the common hacks that people use. And, it gives you an opportunity. If you are the victim of piracy, which you would be in that case, you can contact Microsoft. They'll ask you some questions, and they'll, depending on the situation, I believe they'll actually give you a copy of Windows give you Windows at a much vastly reduced rate.
Saying, I got screwed, and they'll say,
but
okay,
here's we'll take the, I'll rat the guy out and.
Right.
You can hook me up.
Right.
So in those situations.
Oh, it's an informant kind of a gig.
You're right. You actually get a pair of mouse ears and a piece of cheese. And, the snitch hat, like on The Simpsons. And I don't know. So there are situations, but I looked at it and I sort of thought about it. And I obviously have a legitimate copy of Windows, but. It would always be interesting to see if this thing turned around and bit me in the butt. So,
well, good. You do it. Yeah.
I do it so you don't have to.
Yeah. See if you're legal.
This is interesting. Microsoft getting into the security business a little bit.
Well, sort of. I mean, they, you know, through a combination of legal means, and I guess they shut down a bunch of sites at the, you know, the IP level or whatever. Yeah, you know, I'm not really sure how to react to this kind of thing.
This is what the FBI should be doing. How does Microsoft even shut down a botnet?
Well, again, through
they know about contacts, it.
Yeah, legal and law enforcement contacts and okay. so forth. Yeah, you know, I don't, like I said, I mean, I have too many friends and family members who come to me with these computers that have weird spam, not spam, like malware stuff going on their right. computers, right. not to understand that this is an issue with real people. It just is, you know.
Right.
On the other hand, I mean, I'm safe, I think, but I also test software all the time and, you know, think nothing of putting my Facebook password into an application that will access Facebook without actually thinking, you know, why am I trusting these people I don't know with this information, you know, that kind of stuff. I mean, you never know, right? But I've never really suffered from a major malware infection of any kind other than when I sort of did so explicitly while testing Service Pack 2 for Windows XP years and years ago.
Oh, you did it on purpose.
I didn't get it on purpose, but I, in the course of beta testing that product, you had to turn off your firewall
right.
during one of the early betas in order to print over it to a network printer. I can't remember the exact circumstance, but one of the times I did that, I forgot to put the firewall back on.
Whoopsies.
So my computer was wide open, and yeah, I got some crazy malware thing.
Huh.
But, you know, that was it. I mean, that's like the one thing I can point to. That affected anything, and I don't know. You know, I don't know what people are doing.
I know what they're doing. You don't want to know what they're doing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but I have. It's amazing to me how many people come to me and say, "Ah, my computer's running really slow. I got these things popping up everywhere. My browser doesn't go to my homepage anymore. I've got toolbars, and it's like, guys, seriously, what are you doing with this thing? You treat it like a toilet. Like I don't understand." I don't know, but I don't understand how it happens exactly, but I understand that it happens. So apparently there are tens of thousands of these zombie computers out there in the world, and this spam bot network thing, you know, uses them to send spam and malware and other things around the world and so forth. So by shutting down the domains that were responsible for controlling the botnet, right. they were able to shut down most of the bad effects of the botnet, including 1.5 million spam emails that were sent every day.
Holy. So that's what these botnets are often used for, is forwarding spam.
Yeah. There's like zombie computers, essentially.
Holy moly. That's something.
So I guess what I would say is, you know, aside from the common sense stuff that should be obvious to everyone, Microsoft does have a Protect Your PC website, you know, Microsoft.com/protect. And if you're unclear about what you need to do to keep yourself safe online, you know.
And Security Essentials, folks, it's free. There's no reason not to have it. I know some people don't want to pay for an antivirus. I hear so many people who say,
the
subscription ran out. But I still have it on my system.
Load up your Maxthon browser, whatever you're using now in the EU, and go to the site.
Maxon. The browser for Europeans. Sleipnir. If you're Finnish, you'll love Sleipnir.
Yeah, do not be confused by the occasional Asian character sets.
Windows 7 feature of the week, something new Paul's doing every show. And just to remind people that Windows 7 has some great new features you might not have seen.
Yeah, and again, just to further the point of the series, we probably talked about this particular feature a year and a half ago or something. I don't know. But, you know, people are using Windows 7 now, right? So this will probably be more meaningful for them. One of the cool new things in Windows 7 are its Windows management features, right? So if you've seen some of those goofy, you know, I designed Windows 7 ads or whatever they are, I believe this is one of the features that they highlight. But it's called Arrow Snaps. Not that you'll ever actually see that name anywhere in the UI, but it's just a new way to manage Windows. So in addition to all of the stuff that's, you know, been available in Windows, you know, for a long, long time, like the, you know, minimize, maximize, and close buttons up in the top bar there, and also the, you know, the command bar. bar with its own little mini menu and so forth. They've added some other ways to manage these windows. So, for example, if you drag a floating window up to the top of the screen and actually hit the edge, you'll see an animation that will indicate that that thing will then maximize to the full window size. You can drag windows to the left or right side of the screen to dock them and have them automatically occupy one half of the screen, which is a really cool feature, especially if you have to copy content between two different windows. Or maybe I use this a lot to compare Word documents side by side, right? So you have one on the left, one on the right. There's lots and lots of different shortcuts. I've got them all documented in an article, which a link to, you know, you can find on my site. If you go to winsupersite.com/win7 and look for the feature focus articles, you'll see that arrow snaps is one of them. But one of the cool things that isn't necessarily obvious is that you can also control the windows on screen using keyboard controls. So if you're kind of a keyboard guy, one of the cool things, and I actually do use this a lot, I hate taking my hands off the keyboard. You can select a window, you know, using your standard alt tab, you know, keyboard shortcut, and then use Windows key plus one of the directional arrows to dock it on the side or, maximize it and so forth. And what's cool about the window key plus arrow shortcuts is if you hold down the window key while a floating window is highlighted, and you repeatedly tap, say, the right arrow key, it will go from being floating in the middle, and then it will dock on the right, and then it will dock on the left, and then it will go back to floating in the window. You can actually toggle it through all the different left to right states that are available. So just a cool, little thing. And it's one of those things, there's no way to find out about it in a way when you're using Windows 7, other than you'll notice it as you move Windows around. And I think that's how people almost will stumble upon this feature, which is kind of interesting, you know, kind of a new way to do UI. Yeah. Usually Microsoft will put some big window in the middle of the screen and says, do you know, that this is possible? So they're trying to take a step back from that kind of stuff, obviously, in Windows 7. But it's a little thing, but it's something that will make you more productive, and it's got a nice kind of animation effect to it and so forth. Really nice. Nice use of the whole, you know, glass UI and all that stuff.
Very, very nice. Now, we're going to take a little time out to mention our friends at audible.com, and Paul's going to do an Audible pick, but let me set you up a little bit here, Paul. Paul and I are listeners, audio listeners, of course. We love podcasts, but I also love to listen to books on my iPhone, my iPod, the Zune, the Kindle, many GPS devices. Coming soon, I'm hoping and praying to Android. That's the one thing missing from my Nexus phone. It's just
Have to think it's going to happen this year.
I've been told it's this year, that it's soon, like it's the next few months.
Yeah, it just doesn't make sense.
Oh, it's got to. Otherwise. It's got to. Audible.com, AUDIBLE.com, is a really great resource to know about because you can listen to these books. There are 70,000 plus of them in every possible category. We talked about the new Stephen King novella that's on there last week. It's just really great stuff. Just go there. Take a look at it. Audible.com. And browse around. And now I'm going to tell you how you can get your first book free, because I think I know a lot of people are a little bit skittish about the idea of listening to audiobooks. You know, you're listening to a podcast. It's not very much different. But if you're a little nervous about that, and I can understand it, you might want to try one free and see if this is, you know, the way you'd like to listen to books. And you can. It's very, very easy to do. You just go to audible.com/windows. And right there, you can sign up for that gold account. That's a book a month. I'm actually a 2-book-a-month guy. But, you know, you're starting out. Make it easy on yourself. One book a month. First one is free, and you get to keep it no matter what. So if you you decide that it's not for you, no problem. Cancel the subscription, or maybe you don't want to do a book a month, just one, because they sell a la carte as well. You can get a book anytime. Just cancel, but you get to keep that first book. You've got a recommendation, Paul. I actually have this on my list. I can't
wait.
Yeah.
I before I get to that, I wanted to mention, I finally got through Under the Dome, right?
Yeah.
Which I've been plodding along.
Was the ending good?
It wasn't.
No.
And not for the reason that Stephen King endings are typically are often not excellent, but it was such a long book, and you kind of, you want to see certain things transpire, and it kind of just, I don't want to give it away, but it kind of just peters out at the end, and it was really... kind of shocking, you know, not shocking. It was the opposite of shocking. It was just disappointing, you know, which is too bad. But I also listened to that book that I recommended on the plane going to and from Florida.
That didn't take much time to read that.
But you know, the Under the Dome one is such a great book, and then at the end it's like, oh, come on, you know.
So really, it just kind of petered out.
Yeah,
it's such a bummer.
It's a tough slog, you know, to get that far, and then yeah, you know, be disappointed.
I hate that when that happens, and you know, Stephen King's usually pretty good on that respect. Well, all right. So yeah,
other than the ending, it was fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, so this week. This is a different type of book. It's called Game Change, Obama and the Clintons, McCain and Palin,
We kind of know how this one ends.
Yeah, it's not... right, exactly. Yeah, it's like a book about the Titanic, you know. It's... well, depending on your perspective.
Yeah, if you're a McCain and Palin person, sure.
In the sense that you know the end. Yes, is what I mean.
Right. Oh, I get it. Oh, okay.
But it's an insider look at all of the different, you know, the major campaigns of the last presidential election here in the U.S.
I love these kinds of books.
Yeah, I do too.
We talked about, you know, in 1960s, Teddy White's The Making of the President, which was so good in 1960.
Yeah, and this Bob one's Woodward, a little, obviously, has written a lot of books along
these
lines.
It's a little more gossipy, I'm told.
Yeah.
It's juicy. Just,
yeah, sure. Well, it's, you know, it's 2010. So.
Yeah. Well, I read a review that said, you know, in 1960, Teddy White could write a book on the mechanics of getting elected, and nobody knew. But in this era, we all know exactly what's going on. You know,
so you may be familiar with this one. I was intrigued by this guy had gotten, and you may know who exactly who I'm talking about. I think it was a historian of some sort had gotten excellent access to Bill Clinton over the years.
Yes,
and the notion of writing a book.
Yes,
which he did, but he wasn't allowed to.
He was
use
off
his
the
notes,
record. Yes,
so he had to do it off the top of his head.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So. I sort of wanted to like that one and be able to read it and recommend it. But then I sort of read about what it was all about. I thought that's ridiculous. So I don't know if you know what I'm talking about.
I do. And I can't remember his name either. I want to say Bill. I can't remember his name. But very famous journalist who did have, you know, amazing access.
I guess long running access.
Yeah. But he wasn't allowed to.
I think they recorded the conversation.
No, he has notes. Yeah. He
has notes, but he wasn't allowed to access them for whatever reason. So. Apparently, it's crazy, you know, maybe deal. In the future there'll be an update to the book where he actually fact checks it against the actual events. But I think what was interesting about it was that a lot of these meetings occurred right as the events were unfolding, so they weren't tempered by time or anything. It was literally as it happened,
right,
which makes it very interesting.
So
anyway,
this one is not that. These guys rode in the bus. Yeah. They've got the story, and they can use their notes.
Right.
Okay, there you go. Game Change, Obama and the Clintons, McCain and Palin, The Race of a Lifetime. Lots of gossip in here, especially about the Palin.
What you will.
The Palin campaign. There's some stuff in here that you just go, whoa. Whoa. And the infighting between the McCain and the Palin. Oh, my gosh. 14 hours, 49 minutes. This is a great deal. You get it free. All you have to do is go to audible.com/windows. We love Audible. We know you will, too. So give it a try. Pick a book, maybe this one, anything. We've got lots of recommendations. Or just browse around, but do listen because you're going to love it. audible.com/windows, and we thank them so much for their support of Windows Weekly. All right, Paul, let's get to the meat of the matter. Your Windows 7 tip of the week, which as opposed to the feature of the week, this one is a tip.
It's a tip. This one comes actually from a friend of mine, Eric Bossman from Amsterdam. And he actually sent me about 20 tips, so I'll probably hopefully I don't have to use all of them. But I thought this was a good one, and it was just around the notion of you know, completing Windows 7. Because as many of you may realize, you know, Windows 7 ships with a vastly reduced set of functionality compared to Windows Vista. It could be good, bad, or indifferent depending on your perspective. But there are ways to complete the picture, one of which is quite important, and that's around the security component. Because Windows 7 ships with a firewall, it ships with some other security controls and so forth. But what it doesn't ship with is antivirus, you know, kind of one missing piece, or anti-malware. Microsoft offers a free download for that called Microsoft Security Essentials. It works actually for XP, Vista, and 7, so it's applicable to everybody. If you're not paying for a security solution, I think this is a great one. It's the one I use. I use this across all of my PCs, my kids' PCs, my wife's PC, and it's It's a great product, lightweight and all that kind of good stuff. From a more functional perspective, Windows 7 doesn't ship with an email program. Yeah. It doesn't ship with a photo manager software and a bunch of other stuff. So, you know, the Movie Maker program is gone from Windows and all that. So
you can, still
download
it.
You can still get it. It's free, and it supposedly, we'll see, but by releasing these things separately, Microsoft will be able to update them more quickly and more frequently, and they're available as part of Windows Live Essentials, along with other stuff. You know, there's a browser toolbar, Microsoft's instant messaging program, Windows Messenger. You know, there's a blog editor called Windows Live Writer and some other stuff. So if you're running Windows 7, absolutely, these are among the very first things that I install anytime I do a new Windows 7 install. It kind of goes Windows 7, Windows Live Essentials, you know, Microsoft Security Essentials, all the Windows Update stuff, Office, and then I kind of go from there. So these are free. They're available from the Microsoft website, and they kind of complete the picture, if you will, when it comes to Windows 7.
Yes, and a must-have.
Yeah, I think so.
Software pick of the week from Eric Bozeman.
Yeah, this one's interesting to me. You know, my wife has a Droid phone, you know, the Verizon Droid.
Droid.
It's great, but, and this was probably the case in the Nexus One, I would imagine as well, but you know, there's no real good, method for synchronizing music and media content to the device. It certainly doesn't offer the integrated experience.
No, I have a way to do it, but I'm interested what you've got.
There's different ways to do it. You know, there's something called,
Double twist. That's what I use. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's pretty well, but, this pick is, this is from Brian Rex, via email. This is something called TuneSync.
Oh, I'll have to try this.
The reason this is interesting is it allows you to, sync over Wi-Fi as well.
Ooh, so you don't have to hook it up.
Yeah. So definitely something to look at, if you're an Android user.
Yeah. I'm going to try this. That's great.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to mention, Phil Worthington emailed about a program we've recommended in the past called SkyDrive Explorer. That program has been renamed. It still exists. It's called SD Explorer.
Oh.
And it now comes in free and pro versions. And the pro version is, I want to say, I think it's $9.99, but in euros. And it offers some more advanced functionality around doing things like creating folders up on the server and moving things around up on the server. You know, the basic version will allow you to access your SkyDrive storage in a standard Windows Explorer window and copy things over to it and so forth. But the pro version provides some additional functionality. But it's also at a different URL now. So it's cloudstorageexplorer.com, which maybe suggests they're going to branch out at some point too.
Very good. We're done. That completes.
You know what? I have another. I think I'm going to give you another tip later.
Another tip. I knew it. See, I knew you just couldn't stop.
I didn't write this down, but this one's kind of cool. This is like one of the issues that I wrestle with when it comes to digital media content is that you know, I have Zune devices and the Zune software, which I find excellent, but they don't, you know, it doesn't solve all of my needs. A lot of my stuff goes through iTunes. I do buy content through the iTunes store. I've got an iPod and an iPhone and all that. So, you know, maintaining the two different ecosystems is kind of tough, you know. And in the future, I found a tool that will let you take your iTunes playlists and get them into the Zune. And I'll do that one next week, I think. But one of the things I actually discovered on my own that I thought was really cool, I'm kind of proud of myself actually, is if you subscribe to podcasts with iTunes, right, and then you sync them to your iPhone or iPod or whatever. Great. Now, in the old days, before this happened, I would actually often subscribe to some of the same podcasts on the Zune, mm-hmm. so that I could sync them to my Zune HD.
Hmm.
The idea being that depending on which device I had with me at the time, I would still have access to that content that I wanted. But there was a lot of duplication there, right? It's kind of silly when you think about it.
Right.
So with the very latest version of the Zune software, one of the things they added, if you're running Windows 7, is a new podcasts library, right? And if you go into the, and it, they've also sort of changed the way that the Zune accesses media on your system. Like there used to be a Zune folder inside of music, there used to be a Zune folder inside of videos, there used to be a Zune folder inside of pictures. So they don't really do that anymore. You know, now they're using the library system. And so I thought, this is kind of interesting. You know, you can point libraries at different locations. What would happen if you point the podcast library at the podcast folder that's within the iTunes folder structure. You know, what would that do, right? So as expected, it gives you access to the, you know, the podcast you've subscribed to through the Zune. And as you would expect, it also shows you the folder structure of the podcasts that you've subscribed to from iTunes. Hmm. But what's really interesting about it is now those podcasts show up in the Zune software as subscribed podcasts. So as you download new content through iTunes for your podcasts, they actually show up in the Zune software. And you can synchronize them to your Zune HD or your other Zune device, meaning you now only have to download one copy of all your podcasts. This will happen automatically. How cool is that?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's hard. Cool.
No, I get it.
The verbal explanation makes sense, but yes. it's a neat thing, and it works really, really well. I was hoping it doesn't work with iTunes U. I was kind of hoping I could pull in iTunes U content as podcasts, but it doesn't see them as podcasts. Oh, well.
Very good. Mr. Paul Thurrott is the editor-in-chief of the Supersite for Windows. A lot of this stuff is there. If you go to Supersite, winsupersite.com, Paul's always putting new stuff up every day. Tons of new material. You can also read his byline in Windows IT Pro. He's the news editor there. And, of course, his book is Windows 7 Secrets. And available in finer bookstores everywhere.
It's even available in some of the lesser bookstores.
Bad bookstores, too. They don't care. Sure. If you've got money, they'll sell you the book.
That's right.
Some of the better bookstores will put like a bookmark in there with it. So, you know, that's the difference, right?
You don't see that a lot anymore.
No, I know.
Really, it really has kind of gone by the wayside.
Yeah, basically, they take your book, get out of here.
Yeah.
We're done. This transaction is over. All right, Paul. Hey, have a great, I'm sorry spring has not yet sprung in Dedham.
It will happen eventually.
I wish you were looking at what I'm looking at. The tulip trees are in bloom. The cherry trees are blossoming.
It's gray from top to bottom here.
Oh, no, that's good. It's so pretty out here. It'll be warm soon. Daylight savings time is coming in just a couple of weeks.
All right.
Just think of it that way. Thanks, Paul. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly.